I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I watched Concrete Cowboy, so obviously I want to talk about it. So I grew up in the Midwest. Y'all all know this. If you are new to the show, I grew up in the Midwest, Kansas City, Missouri. My parents bought a farm. I can't remember, was I 7 or 8? Can't call when they bought the farm. But they bought this farm in this little farming community outside of Kansas City. And at the time, I thought that my parents were city slickers going, you know, taking a stab at being farmers. What I didn't understand, at least at the time, was that my dad grew up in a farming community back in Monroe. Well, Sterlington, which is outside of Monroe, Louisiana, talking about Louisiana. And my mama grew up in Wichita, which is not a farming community, but, you know, it's Kansas girl. So there's like lots of farms and all of that stuff. And so mommy was still very much a city slicker. Daddy was not necessarily a city slicker. He was essentially going back to something that his people had done for years over, even though the way the houses were set up, it wasn't as if the houses were on the farm where daddy grew up. They were around the corner for all intents and purposes. Long story short, though, I thought that neither one of them had any connection to farming and farmland and all of that stuff, and this was new to them. And so over the years, I hated every minute of living on a farm except for the peace and tranquility. But, you know, mom and dad were cattle farmers for 20 years. It was a great source of income for our family. Not to mention, it was just a great way to save money on buying meat, because we just raise cattle, keep one for ourselves, have it processed, and eat off that meat for 4 months. It was like every part of it that you could eat, we did reasonably. And so anyway, it saved on money, but then also you raise the cattle yourself, so you know what the thing ate, which is why going in on whatever the proper term is, going in with a farmer is a good idea, so that you can understand what your animal is being raised with and all the things that are being done to it to keep it well. Because again, I grew up eating eating cow meat that from cattle that we raised, and so it didn't have all that stuff that you get in your you typically get in cattle that's raised in like a mass sort of situation, and then you know, it's put on the shelves at a major grocery store. So, and I know I've told this story before, but long story short, so I was essentially raised on that, and then I go to college and I instantly get sick eating beef at college, and I couldn't figure out why. And then I think it was my daddy that was like, well, baby, maybe consider that the quality and what they're doing to it is different than what you were used to with us here. We just small time farmers. We got small time processor, like a butcher. We don't do too much. Not to mention, like, just as an aside, we seasoned. We had our butcher season ours, because, I mean, duh. But, like, we had, like, y'all know Creole seasoning? I can't call it. Like, everybody should know Creole seasoning, but maybe not everybody knows it. But anyway, we had it processed, and it would be cured. I don't know that it would be cured in Creole seasoning, but we definitely had the things, like, wrapped up and ready to go with Creole seasoning. It was just a little something or other that we had. And so anyway, so not only was the meat tasteless, or it didn't have any spices on it, like barely any salt and pepper, but then it also just didn't process well. And so that was essentially my, I was hard-headed though, and so I hadn't quite figured out that I should probably stop eating red meat. And I hadn't come to the place where I was fickle, but I definitely recognized that there was a difference in the quality of the meat that I was eating. And because I couldn't necessarily get my hands on that, I probably should stop eating it. I hadn't come to that conclusion yet. Took me a couple of years to finally get that. But anyway, you know, I hated, like I said, I hated every minute of, for the most part, growing up where I grew up, except the tranquility and the fact that, like, I could literally see, it took a minute to get to the end of my parents' property, which means I could just frolic and do my own thing on the land and not be bothered. I love that more than anything in life. And I miss that even today. When the hubby and I travel home, or to my parents' home, which, pause, we didn't always have that land. That was something that my parents had planned to purchase, and then they were able to purchase through an accident that I caused. But anyway, so I didn't grow up with that, but I grew up seeing that land and my parents coming into an opportunity to seize that land, or not seize it, but purchase it fair and square. Anyway, and right next to our cattle farm, this is where I was going, y'all. Again, if you're new, thank you so much for listening. I ramble is what it is. Anyway, so we raised cattle, and the farm next to us had, it was more like a ranch, and they had horses. And every once in a while, the horses would get out, and, you know, we'd have to call the neighbor, come get their horses, you know, take them back. Because my dad always, and this is just, I'm not trying to be funny or anything like that, but daddy always said, you know, they don't keep their land like the way we keep our land. So, of course, the horses want to break out and come over to ours, because we have a whole lot of sweet, tall grass. And, you know, it's just better over here. We had a spring and everything. So when the horses would escape, they would go down in our little valley, because it's hard to explain my parents' land. It's not like a ton. It's like not more than 48. It's like maybe 45 acres. It's not a ton. It's not a ton. And Google an acre. If you don't know what the measure of an acre is, Google it. Anyway, it's like, yeah, it's like 40, maybe 45 acres, something like that. And there's a natural spring on the land. And it's, the spring is in the valley. Imagine a one-level house that is multi-roomed, and that's sitting atop a hill. And behind that one-level house, they call those one-level houses ranch-style houses. And behind that one-level house is a valley that is tree-lined and has a pond, which was man-made, and then a natural spring. Google a spring, and you can kind of imagine it. Just, and anyway, yeah, it's about maybe 2 miles. I don't know. It's hard to determine how long the thing is. Well, it's not hard to determine. It's hard for me to get a grasp on, or at the very least try to explain how much land they have. But blah blah blah. Anyway, just picture like countryside with lush grass, because my dad liked to seed, daddy's a cultivator. I mean, they don't do that anymore. Daddy gave that up. Daddy rents the land now, because he just want money for the land. He don't want to do no work no more. And mommy is so tired of keeping the books on that. So they gave that up, And now they're just traveling and being old and loving it. Anyway, that was Daddy's theory that the horses would always get out because our land was better. We kept our land up better. Anyhow, on a couple of occasions when the horses would get out, my brother that's closest in age to me, I know one time he got on one of them horses, and how he did it was the old fashioned way. So, and this particular horse definitely was used to being ridden, and definitely was used to being ridden the way that my brother mounted him, which was to grab the mane, at the root, and get kind of like a running start and essentially catapult himself on the back of the horse. And this particular horse, if you can picture it, it's like a, not a chocolate brown, but like a milk chocolate brown, mane to match and everything. And it was not a teenager, definitely an older horse, but not old. But anyway, so that's how my brother mounted the horse. And the horse just, while he was doing it, and I was scared out of my mind. Y'all, you need to know that when my brother, who's close to me in my age, did this, let me tell you my height. I could not have been taller than 4 foot. Maybe I was like 3 foot something. I was an early teen when my brother had done this. If I was a teen at all, I was 13. Probably. I was probably 12. Anyhow, I had not yet hit my little bitty old growth spurt. And so anyhow, so my brother mounts this horse and I'm instantly scared. Because what's the number one thing that I'm scared of? You may not know, but the number one thing I'm scared of, because I think of the worst thing that can happen, which is this horse is going to kick the life out of me, because I am literally, it's thigh height. Well, not thigh, but what is it? Yeah, it's like thigh height, right? Like I'm not to the middle, maybe the top of my head, maybe like my forehead is to the middle of this horse's stomach, but I'm like right in prime kicking spot for this thing to kick me. And so I'm like, I'm so mad at my brother for mounting this horse because it's going to kick me. I just know it's going to kick me because he mean to me and we fight all the time and he going to find a way to make this horse kick me. And what I wasn't understanding is, girl, you could simply not be this close enough for the horse to kick you, my dear. You could simply not be inside the fence. You could simply take your tail in the home. I also went everywhere that this brother went, which is probably why we fought all the time. Anyway, plus I didn't like going out by myself, like venturing out onto the land by myself, because active imagination thought that everything and their mother was going to come and get me and keep me. And so anyway, growing up, we didn't have horses, but I was always around horses. I've always found them to be very majestic and beautiful horses. Even beyond that, my mama used to take us. I only went like one or two times. And I'm be honest with you, I don't even remember going in. I think my older brother and sister that lived with us went. But anyway, what I'm talking about is Kansas City had a rodeo, black rodeo, for many, many, many years, if I'm understanding the thing correctly. And so my mama would take us kids to go to the rodeo. And she enjoyed going to the rodeo too. I think she went a couple of times with her friends. Obviously she went a couple of times with Daddy, but she would take us kids as a thing to do. I don't remember. I remember going to the black rodeo. I don't remember going in. I remember I have a memory. One of my earliest memories of being in the parking lot, and it was nighttime. And I remember in Kansas City where the black rodeo was. I can't call. It's been so long. I can't even call where it was. But if you're from the Kansas City area, you know what I'm talking about, or you should probably Google it, because you should learn your history. Anyway, but there was this. What was it over by? Antioch? It was off Antioch. There used to be a shopping center there. It was over there by where the supermarket Walmart used to be, that big old Kids R Us, Toys R Us used to be, that big old Sam's Club used to be. I'm sure all of that is torn down now, but I really do think it was over by Antioch Mall, where Antioch Mall used to be. You should Google it. Antioch Mall in Kansas City. Anyway, it was in and around that area. And anyway, I remember as part of like the display, there were silhouettes of cowboys. But getting back to that memory, I don't actually remember seeing the rodeo. I remember it being nighttime and waiting on my brothers and sisters and two of my siblings that didn't live with us to come get back in the car so we could go. I don't actually remember going in. So anyway, and I remember the lights of whatever the show was and it had been real loud and all of that stuff. And then again, waiting on my siblings to come out so we can go home. Anyway, and I think actually this was before we moved to the farm, outside Kansas City. Anyway, so those are my earliest memories of cowboys. I always knew that there was black cowboys was a thing. And it wasn't just because I was from Missouri. It's just something I knew, just like there are black farmers, because my daddy and my mom and my daddy were one. And that even before that, their people were farmers. Like, I knew that there were also black cowboys, because duh. Anyway, it just never occurred to me that people would find black cowboys to be an anomaly. So even when I went to school, I went to school at Iowa State, and there were some black kids that were from the Oklahoma area. And even when they would talk about the rodeo, if I'm remembering it correctly, they would go to the rodeo like every Friday night, like you would go to the mall or something like that. That was just something to do. And you would like go out and see your friends and get in trouble and all of that stuff, be bad around the rodeo. And I'm like, okay, cool for you. Sounds a little corny, but like, whatever, that's good for you. But like, I grew up in a space where like black cowboys was a regular thing. Now, flash forward, what I know is when I went away to college, that probably either when I went away to college or before I went, like just before I went to college, they demolished the area where the black cowboys in Kansas City would perform. And I don't know if those cowboys were from the Kansas City area or not, or like, I don't know if that was where their stable was or what, but they demolished that little area. And in fact, they demolished Antioch Mall. Was it Antioch or Swope? I don't know. I keep coming back to Antioch. It wasn't very far from Antioch Mall. And anyway, you know, they demolished that Super Walmart, that Toys R Us, Kids R Us, like all of that. They demolished it and they turned it into something else. Whatever they turned it into, I can't call it, but it was a part of the sweeping plan for them to just demolish everything. And if I'm remembering it correctly, this was also right about the time where there was a shift away from mega malls and creating malls and into those like strip, I don't even know what they call them now, but it's a like, it's almost like the outlet mall setup, only like a smaller version of that. Like that's where all these developers kind of went to. And anyway, so as a casualty of that demolition was the where the rodeo was taking place. I don't know until this day, I don't know if they relocated the rodeo somewhere else in the greater Kansas City area or not. I just remember that was a big loss. I remember my mama being frustrated. I remember when my mama took me to go to get my hair done at Caesar House. Caesar was our beautician for many, many years. I pray he's still living. He was such a hoot. If God rest his soul, if he's not. But anyway, he was such a hoot. But I remember Caesar being frustrated that the that the rodeo was going to, because again, it was a big thing that we were a part of, that everybody participate. Well, a lot of folks found enjoyment out of. And anyway, so I don't think I've been in the presence of horses on purpose, apart from like, you know, mounted police officers, in a minute. And I kind of miss them because horses are majestic. Even if I'm too scared to ride one, horses are majestic beings. If I were ever to own a horse, it would be like a milk chocolate brown one. And I would braid its hair. I'd braid its mane so that it can match my locks. And or maybe I wanted to have black. Maybe I wanted to have black hair, and I would dye the tips like a chocolate. Like a milk chocolate to match my hair a little bit. Anyway, but horses are way too expensive to just have as a pet. Even coming here in Baltimore. Coming here to Baltimore, obviously we have Pimlico. Obviously this is a big racing city. And there's this unique thing that I found that's very interesting. There's this group of black merchants, vegetable merchants. Well, produce merchants that go around certain neighborhoods across Baltimore City. For the most part, they travel around in food desert areas, and they sell produce, basically. And they're called here Arabbers. And for the longest time, I thought that was a pejorative. And actually, even as I'm talking about this, I'm going to Google it, because I never did decide. I never did bother to understand Arabbers. Yeah. So if you Google Arabbers, it's a Baltimore thing. And it's literally called Arabbers, Baltimore. And again, I thought it was a pejorative talking about folks from the Middle East, or Muslim identified folks. And I didn't like to say it for a while, but it really described these produce farmers. It's not always produce, but it is. But when you Google Arabber, you will instantly get the picture of what I'm used to seeing around Baltimore. Not so much now, because they wear masks and stuff, and you know, COVID's kind of thrown things for a loop. But these horses still exist. I think what they do is they lease these horses and these carriages to be able to ride around and sell their produce. And they have this particular call that I cannot mimic right now because it's been so long since I heard it. But they have this particular call, and you know they're coming, and you also you know they're coming by their call, but you also know they're coming by the click-clack of the horseshoes on the concrete. But anyway, let me just read real quick what this wiki definition is. It says, an Arabber is a street vendor selling fruits, vegetables from a colorful horse-drawn carriage. So they are produce vendors. Anyway, once a common sight in American East Coast cities, only a handful of Arabbers still walk the streets of Baltimore. They rely on street cries to attract the attention of the customers. So yeah, I wasn't making it up. Anyway, yeah, so I can imagine, it's actually, the way I'm saying it is not how it's spelled. The way I'm saying it is Arabber, because that's the way I was taught to say it when I moved here to Baltimore. It's Arabber, not Arabber. It's just Arabber, and I don't know where the name comes from. The term Arabber is believed to derive from the 19th century slang term street Arab. Oof. Okay. So it is rooted in xenophobia. Well, slang term for street Arabs. Ugh, that just sounds gross to me. Arabbing began in the 19th century when access to ships and stables made it an accessible form of entrepreneurship. African-American men entered the trade following the Civil War. Makes sense, especially here in Baltimore. Brightly painted and artfully arranged Arabber carts became a common sight on the streets of Baltimore to alert city dwellers to the arrival. Arabbers developed distinctive calls. Holler, holler, holler till my throat gets sore. If it wasn't for the pretty girls, I wouldn't have to holler no more. I say watermelon, watermelon, got them red to the Rhine lady. Yeah, I've never heard any of these calls. They're different calls. Anyway, I really want to go in street Arabs. Street children. What? Nope, that's not what it is. Anyway, yeah, I just, but these produce vendors, these street produce vendors using these carts to sell produce, they still very much exist. I don't know where their stables are. I feel like their stables are in and around where Pimlico is. Pimlico Racetrack, obviously home to one of the crown jewel of the triple stakes races for the triple crown races is what I mean. Anyway, but yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, the horses that the Arabers that get the horses, that have the horses today, get them. They rent these horses and they're stabled, or maybe they own these horses and they're stabled at Pimlico. And a lot of these folks also work on Pimlico racetrack grounds, taking care of the horses and things like that. Anyway, so yeah, so horses, even if I haven't ridden horses like that, I don't think I've ever ridden a horse, but like been close enough to touch, I've always had horses in my life some way or fashion. I've always had horses in my life. And so again, mounted police officers, obviously everybody across, I think everybody has some form of a mounted police officer. But then unique to Baltimore these days anyway, is seeing these horses right up and down the street with pulling a cart. And if you've been on Black Twitter recently, there is this viral video of this woman on a horse fussing somebody. Maybe she wasn't fussing anybody out, but she was definitely on a horse on a cell phone riding around down Pennsylvania Avenue. Actually where the person captured her on video was right at that intersection. Was it Johnston Square where the club where Billie Holiday sang, which is catty corner from diagonal from where her statue rests on Lafayette Square. That's where this woman was videotaped crossing the intersection on the cell phone on the back of a horse. I have no doubt that she was returning her horse to the about to get her horse mount not get her horse mounted but hitch up the cart, because that's definitely one of the only reasons why there would be a horse in Baltimore is because they're about to pull a cart. That's kind of what it is. So anyway, it never fails that somebody's going to see the juxtaposition of a horse in an urban environment and find it funny, because it is kind of funny. It's funny to see, but nevertheless, like, it's not funny because a Black person is on a horse, because it's part of our culture, especially here in the United States. It's just a part of our culture here. And so watching the movie that I'm going to talk about today, it makes perfect sense to me that there is a Black cowboy community in Philly, because there's a rich horsing tradition here in Baltimore, and Philly ain't but 2 hours away from Baltimore. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Maybe horse racing is the big thing there, but it makes sense that there's a horse community, a black cowboy community in Philly. I would dare say that I'm quite sure that there was a time probably that in every urban city in the United States, there was a Black cowboy community. Mm-hmm. Feels good. Because again, it's too natural. And again, I grew up in the Midwest, fair. I grew up in the Midwest, lots of cows, lots of horses. So of course, horses is just a part of my life. But yeah, it's just, it's not an anomaly to me. I imagine it's weird to some folks, but it's not an anomaly. It doesn't surprise me that there's a black a black cowboy community in Philly. And so, you know, I was, on the one hand, I was drawn to the film. First, I was like, oh, they're going to talk about Baltimore's a relationship to horses. And of course it wasn't. It was about Philly. And then I was like, oh, okay. When I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, all right. So there's tragic elements in here that I know that there are tragic elements in here that I don't want to see. Somebody gonna get hurt. Somebody gonna get busted by the cops. There's gonna be the tension somewhere in this film, and it's gonna be kind of stereotypical. And I'm not wrong. I wasn't wrong. There were definitely tropes in this film that I wish weren't there, but the story was a good one. And I like the fact that they used Philly actors. You could tell they were from Philly. Just like, again, you can't fake a Baltimore accent, you can't fake a Philly accent. You just can't. So if you are directing a film that is supposed to be in Philly, you might as well get actors that are from that community, because you need the accent. You need the accent. It's key. And what was that girl's name? What was old girl's name? Tessa Thompson gonna try to fake a Philly accent for the Creed franchise. I'm like, girl, if you don't let that be. And what's that? The guy that played Creed, Michael. Can't call his name. Anyway, he didn't even bother to have he didn't even try to have a Philly accent. I don't think anybody in there had a Philly accent. Maybe like one or two Philly actors. But like, if you are going to set a film in Philly, in Baltimore, you literally cannot have actors from the community to give you the accent, because it's so prevalent in the community. It's what makes these cities what they are. Even DC, I will say, even DC, you cannot set a movie in DC unless you are making it about the lawmakers or whatever. You cannot set a movie in DC and not have black folks in it, or people that are, yeah, well, people of color. Mostly black folks, though, because that is still Chocolate City at one point. Anyway, you have to have the DC accent. It's a particular accent. It's a particular way of speaking. You got to have it. You got to pick it up. Anyway, so I was appreciative that they actually had, not only did they have black, the native Philly actors in this film, but they actually had black cowboys from Philly that were in the film too. They were black cowboys and they were native to Philly. And I'm like, the trifecta, because if you're going to do a thing about this particular community, this very specific community, you better do it right. And so I appreciate that they at least took the care to get that done. Also, Idris Elba is beautiful. And might I say, I am not the only one that is saying this, but let me just add my voice to the chorus of people who are saying how beautiful Method Man is. Method Man is so fine. It's stupid. And I'm annoyed at this point. I'm annoyed at this point. How beautiful this man is. Yes, he does use Just for Men on his beard and his hair. I don't care. He's beautiful. What? Anyway, ugh. And I'm gonna be honest with you, Idris Elba has always been fine. But I'm just saying, Idris has some competition in one Method Man. I'm just saying. Woof. Anyway, so in the next segment, I'm gonna just talk about the film. Obviously, I'm gonna talk about what I did not like about it. I will try to keep that to a minimum, but we'll see how it goes. Oh, Jarrell Jerome is in this thing, which I love Jarrell Jerome. Oh. It's just so sweet. And also the little boy from Stranger Things, who's not a little boy anymore. He has a mustache. He growing up, y'all. Like, I remember him being a little boy, a little cute little boy. That's a teenager now. He probably get on his mama nerves and all of that stuff. Probably sass mouth and all of that stuff. But he's so precious. Oh, and he's, let me tell you, that little baby's skin tone. Oh, my goodness. Just rich chocolate. And look moisturized. Always look moisturized. Even when he looks dusty in this film, never misses an opportunity to be moisturized. So I'm just like, you know what? Keep that skin moisturized. You better keep juices and berries in that hair, baby. As long as you can, keep juices and berries in that hair. Anyway, now that I'm finished being auntie, I'm going to talk about the film, go over the particulars. Lorraine Toussaint is in. Anyway, I'm messing up. I usually do the particulars later, but like, there were so many people in this thing. Lorraine Toussaint, who I love, Idris Elba, because Method Man, Jarrell Jerome, and I forgot the little boy name from, excuse me, the teenager's name from Stranger Things, but I'll give his name. And the critic's response, or at the very least, the ratings on this thing. And then I'll just go through the film. Maybe I won't break down scene for scene because I do want you to see it. But what I will do is talk about some of the highlights. So in the next segment is all about Concrete Cowboy. Okay, so I've stretched and my voice is a little warmer, but my tummy is still growling and I do need to eat at some point soon, so I'm gonna try to power through this. And not spoil too much of the film, so that you can still watch it. So anyway, so let me just dive into the particulars. So Concrete Cowboy was released on April 2nd. So by the time you're listening to this, last week Friday, it was directed by Ricky Staub, a story by Gregory Neri, based on Ghetto Cowboy by Greg Neri. Here it goes. And it stars Caleb McLaughlin, Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things. Anyway, look, Caleb, how old is that little boo-boo? He's probably a raging teenager. This man is 19 years old. Oh, I'm so silly. I'm sorry. See, this is the, he's a 19-year-old man. Well, he's not a man. He's still a baby. 19, you still a baby. I don't care. Anyway, so he was born in 2001. All right. Anyway, he's going to be 20 this year, you guys. So Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things fame. Let me go back. Who else are we talking about? Idris Elba, duh. I don't know how many times I said it. Jarrell Jerome, Method Man, because woof. Lorraine Toussaint, who I love. I don't think I did an episode about it. Oh, I featured her because she was in Fast Color. She was the mother, the grandmother. She was the grandmother in Fast Color. That's what it was. And even though I was talking about Fast Color, I must have spent 20 minutes talking about Lorraine Toussaint and how much I love her. Maybe I didn't spend 20 minutes, but I spent some time talking about Lorraine Toussaint. Because she's just beautiful. I have always been drawn to her on screen because of her, that voice. You don't really hear, I mean, you hear her voice, but she doesn't really use its full power in this film because it's not about that. It's more so about her as her character, like who she's representing. But that woman's voice, she has one of the best voices. I just love it. Anyway, so Lorraine Toussaint, and there are some other actors in here.
there are some other actors in here who are, I guess all of them have been acting. But anyway, I'll just talk about these main ones here. Caleb, Idris, Jarrell, Method Man, and Lorraine. Anyway, so let me go back right quick. One thing about it, Idris Elba go give you a good chest shot. And anyway, this still, the movie still where he's got the like pinkish, the pinkish kerchief on his neck with his shirt open. You see a little chest. Anyway, Idris Elba. Let me stop lusting. Anyway, so right now it's 77% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb. Again, I don't know how they get to their ratings. 67% on Metacritic. Don't know who populates that. 94% of Google users enjoyed this film, of which I am one. And yeah, again, I enjoyed this film more so for the cowboy aspect and for who was starring in it more than I enjoyed it for the story, because the story was full of tropes. But I'm not going to start with the things that I don't like. I'm going to start with the things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the fact that it was exposing a culture of cowboys in Philly that people don't even think of. First off, when the average person thinks of Philly, if you're from the United States, even if you're from abroad, and again, many of the folks that are listening to this are from the UK. Hey y'all, how y'all doing? Anyway, yeah, so I bet you the first thing you think of when you think of Philly is not horses and cowboys. I bet you one of the first things you think of probably is cheesesteak. If you're from the United States, you probably think the Philly cheesesteak. If you're from outside of the United States, you probably think Philly cheesesteak, because that phrase is kind of everywhere. You probably then think of probably the Rocky movie. If you don't think Philly cheesesteak right off the bat, you probably think of the Rocky movie. And the brotherly love. When you think of Philly, you probably think of City of Brotherly Love, and you probably see that the love sculpture. You probably think of Rocky and him walking up, running up those, I forgot the building steps that he ran up, but you probably think of that movie and that scene and all of that. And these days, depending on your age, you probably think of Creed. You probably think of Creed and Philly in that perspective. And depending on your culture, you probably think of Freeway, because he is one of the, is he the most famous rapper out of Philly? Or is that just my, no. At the moment, the most famous rapper out of Philly right now is Meek Mill, probably. Anyway, but like, yeah, so like depending on how you are culturally oriented, and your culture and where you're from and all of that stuff, there you probably think of a myriad things before you think, if you even do think, of black cowboys in Philly. Because it's not something that most people, unless you are aware, it's just not something that most people think of. And so to have a film that is exposing something, a very important part of Philly culture, especially black Philly culture, I love that. I love films and documentaries that are sharing aspects of culture that mainstream society doesn't really identify as being a part of their culture, because what it's really doing is making transparent, making plain the complexity that is a culture, that is the complexity that is a city. A city isn't one thing, a culture isn't one thing. It's complex, it's a myriad things. So, I appreciate this story for exposing this little known aspect of black Philly life. Like I said, I appreciate very much the use of black native Philly actors, because you cannot do a film speaking about a specific subset of the culture, not even a subset, but well, subset is feels like it's taking some relevance away from the culture of this community of cowboys. I'll just say community of cowboys. But you cannot talk about this very specific community of cowboys that is embedded in Philly and not have Philly actors voicing these, playing these characters. And what we know is that in the film, they used actual cowboys from this community. One in particular, whose name I cannot remember, when you watch this film, you are introduced to a black cowboy that is in a wheelchair. He is actually a cowboy from that Philly group, and really helps to anchor, in my opinion, that part of the community. At least it really doesn't anchor the movie, but it nails home. He helps kind of solidify the realities of why this community exists these days. Because to be honest with you, it's the reason why those communities exist anywhere they are. It's the same reason why there was a black rodeo in Kansas City. If I'm gonna keep it 100, that's the same reason why there was a rodeo in Kansas City that unfortunately did not survive. For the same reason why so many other culturally specific things have a hard time surviving in urban sprawling development places is because, you know, though they're culturally relevant, that relevance does not trump or outweigh cash money. They just don't. Or cold, hard cash. Anyhow, and people are greedy and all of that stuff, but I do appreciate the storytelling. And I appreciate using actual Philly actors and using actual cowboys from that community in the film. Made it just chef's kiss, in my opinion. Anyhow, so what else did I like about it? I liked the fact it's very well known in the, like, the trailer does not hide the fact that what's that boy's name? Why am I about to call him Cody? What is that teenager's name? Caleb. Caleb's character, what? Cole, they call, oh, okay, let me just stop calling these actors by their first name. Caleb McLaughlin plays Cole. Idris plays Harp. Jarrell plays Smush, which, that's a hood. You know, these pet names, I tell you, like, you don't choose your pet names, but boy, do they ever stay with you. And they don't make a lick of sense except to the people that gave them to you. But the whole community be calling you by the nickname and they don't even know why. When I moved here, it was so funny to me because one of my husband's cousins, they call him Chicken. One of them they call Stink. I was like, for your nickname to be Stink. Oh my gosh. Like, that's your nickname. My cousin's name, I have several, like, my parents and my family members call me different nicknames depending on how I'm behaving, because apparently I have aspects of my personality that shine forth more in certain situations than others. And so anyway, depending on how I'm behaving, they will call me one pet name, and then they'll call me another one depending on how sweet I'm being. I have a million is my point. And one of the pet names is a diminutive of my given name, my birth name. But one of my cousins' name is Germ, like literally G-E-R-M, not German. It's not short for German. It's Germ. And it's for the reason you think. He was Jeremy. He was Jeremy, and he was always into stuff. And so we just called him Germ, and that's his name to this day, his nickname to this day. One of my cousins' name is Homer. Home. Literally, H-O-M-E. Why? Because she liked to stay in the house. So they called her Home. My uncle calls her Homer. Yeah, man. And then one of my cousins doesn't even have a nickname. In the same family, don't have a nickname. Everybody, all of the other ones have a nickname except for her. call her by her first name. That's it. And so anyway, I just love pet names. I love them. I love them. Nicknames, because the terms of endearment. But anyway, like, only if you get a good one. And my pet names are embarrassing. But I can't, what I'm going to do, say, no, uncle, you can't call me that. I mean, I could, but like, it's not that deep. Anyway, but yeah, so, but getting back to this, but Jarrell is playing Smush, and I would love to know the backstory on that nickname, Smush, but it is what it is. Probably because the character that he's actually playing, the person that he's actually playing, they probably smushed him a lot. And they just called him Smush. And then Meth is playing Leroy. Oh, Method Man. This picture that I'm looking at right now doesn't make him look beautiful. It just makes him look like a old man that is probably handsome. Never mind. Y'all can Google him. Y'all don't need me to help describe a better picture to you. There, y'all know that. Y'all seen that meme where he looks like he's pulling up his underwear and he don't have no shirt on. In some movie that he was in or some TV show that he was in, and he's talking to whomever he just finished being with, and just delicious. Anyway, how old is this man? He probably old enough to be my. He old enough to be my big brother. Anyway, moving on. Go away, girl. Anyway, let me get back to what I was supposed to be doing instead of lusting over Method Man. Okay, so Meth plays Leroy and Lorraine plays Nessie. And I don't care who you are, if you are part of the Black diaspora, you got an aunt named Nessie or some variation of Nessie. Nephie, Nessa. Short for Vanessa, but you're not going to call her Vanessa. You're going to call her Aunt Nessa. And so Nessie, sounds about right. Could be a diminutive of anything. But yeah, so you got Nessie. So let me try to, so again, Cole, Harp, Smush, Leroy, and Nessie. Again, I'm not going to give away this film because I really do want you to watch it. It's only been out a week at this point by the time you're hearing this thing. So hopefully you will have an opportunity to watch this thing. So what I will do is just kind of. Yeah, so let me finish. Let me just finish talking about the things that I liked about it as I'm talking about the crux of the story. So this story has, for the most part, it's something like the Boys in the Hood story, right? So you've got a couple that is split and the mother's taken the child and she's moved him away, right? It's almost like giving you, anyway, it's a couple that's split and the child is being raised by the mother. And she lives in Detroit. So Caleb and his mother live in Detroit. Oh, here's the other thing I love about this, that the mother, Caleb, and Idris are all brown skin. Cannot miss that. There are a lot of brown skin. There's a lot of brown hues in this whole film. The spectrum is here of brown. Like, I would never accuse Method Man of being brown skin. That guy is just shy of being light. Like, he's like 3-4 drops of brown from being super light, or maybe not super light, but definitely light. And actually, some people would consider him to be on the light skin side. But anyway, I don't think he's not light skin, but he's definitely not dark skin, and he's like just shy of being brown skin. So he's like on the lower end. Never mind. I'm just getting worse. Anyway, there's a range of brown in this film, which I appreciate. That's what I really want to say. Yikes. Anyway, forgive me for being colorist. That was very weird. Anyway, so I definitely love the fact that the mother and father and the child are all brown, and that's just what it is. You don't often get that, or at least I don't often see that in films and TV that I'm watching. You don't always, it's if the mother is brown, the father is light. If the father is brown, the mother is light, right? And the kid is definitely going to be light or biracial looking. It's just what Hollywood and studios enjoy doing, writers enjoy doing too. Even black writers will follow that same trope, which is the weirdest thing. Look at Lovecraft Country. Like, you can't deny good acting, but at the same time, I feel like they made a lot of these choices on purpose. Like, one of the showrunners, it all but alluded to that, basically saying, I did this on purpose. Okay, girl. Anyway, can we just have brown and not make it a big thing? Like, can we all just be, can we have the spectrum of brown represented in a way that makes sense and not intentionally be colorist and weird? Anyway, because if you really want to go there, old girl that played Letty could have played, was it Ruby? She could have played Ruby. She actually would have been better playing Ruby. I think she would have been better playing Ruby, but that's just me. Anyway, because the way she would have played it would have been, she would have had a ball, but that's okay because old girl had a ball too. Old girl had a ball with her part. Moving on, I'm sorry, I'm calling her old girl because she's a great actress. Can't call her name right now though. Can't even call the name of Letty. Girl, whatever, Google it. Anyway, but getting back to the film, I really appreciated the fact that there was more brown skin representation, and it wasn't even a big deal. It was just a part of the landscape of the hues of brown, which is what I appreciate because my family is full of so many different shades. I've talked about this before. I don't know a single black family that doesn't have a wide range of brown. Like, the whole color spectrum of brown, the brown color wheel, got it. Every aspect of brown, got it. I don't know any family that doesn't. I don't know too many families, I'll say that. I don't know too many families that don't, which is a whole nother conversation that I will not get into. Because I know a couple of families that are intentional about color. Anyway, moving on. So I really enjoyed that. I said I was going to talk about what I liked first. What I liked about this film is that while this film does not have a wonderful, happy ending. This film is more realistic, and I appreciate that ending. I did appreciate that all was not lost by the end of this film. And I think that's as far as I will say about that. I appreciated that there was history of Philly cowboys told in this film, which you come to expect, right? Because very early on, you get the sense in this film that you're gonna learn something that you didn't learn before, even beyond the fact that there are black cowboys in Philly. But you learn some, like, this film takes an opportunity to teach you some history, which I really, really appreciate. Because it's, in a sense, it's teaching you some, there's a point where it's teaching you some history about black Philly cowboys, but what it's really doing is also teaching you the history of black cowboys in urban cities across the country. Because again, what I tell you, I told you what I told you about those Kansas City Rodeo, something like that. I just remember knowing it as the Black Rodeo. But their land and their space got taken over. Their whole stables. And if I remember it correctly, it was where they performed, but it was also the stables weren't far. Like, where the horses were kept was not far from where they were performing. Like, it was on the same property. And these developers came in, swooped it up, bought it, demolished all of it, and turned it into one of those strip mall sort of thingies. Because it was prime land. And the reality of it is, that is the fate of black cultural centers across the United States. Has been, unless you have the money and the political power to fight it. And even then, you still might be fighting an uphill battle because these corporations that come in, they hustle it. Like they got the loot. They got the loot. And sometimes cities have a hard time not bending to their will. So there's an element of this, of that in this film. And so there is definitely an elder character that is sharing some of that information, sharing that history, which again, it's in the perspective of black, of this group of cowboys, but what they're really doing is sharing the experience of communities like this, black communities like this across the country. What is the other, like, can I just say one more really great thing about the film? No. No, because the next thing I'm going to talk about are the things that I did not enjoy. And I will try not to be too harsh. And again, I will try not to spoil. I will try not to spoil the film. But there are some things that I got to talk about that, again, so it's kind of reminds me of Boys in the Hood, which is, you know, giving me the same vibes, which is not always a good thing. Okay, so now to what I didn't love so much, and why I think you should still watch this film. So, again, as I left off, it rings very much like Boys in the Hood. So Caleb, he's living in Detroit with his mother. Caleb gets into yet another fight, and his mama, you know, is expelled from school, and he's sent to Philly. That's how he's sent to Philly, because he's just, his mama don't know what to do with him. And I really hate that trope. I hate it. Because while I'm not saying that doesn't happen in real life, I'm just tired of seeing it in film as the catalyst for, a boy to finally be free and grow up and get the discipline that he needs. Like it's laying right back into that old stereotype that only a man can raise a child, which is very gender specific, when we know that there are so many, how many of us have had men in our families who all they did as a qualification of being a father was to lend their sperm. And that's just being cold-hearted, or they took the extra step of keeping a job and bringing money home. Beyond that, they did nothing else by way of fatherhood, right? There was no, they weren't super present, weren't super helpful, always the disciplinarian. Like there are, you being a man is not, does not automatically make you a father. And the sperm donor does not automatically make you the father, a father. There's a lot that comes in with that. And what I didn't like about Boys in the Hood is the same thing I don't like about this film, which is the whole, like you've got this wonderful story spotlighting this community of folks that doesn't get a lot of attention. And then the underline here is really this little black boy who's out of control and can't live under his mama's roof. His mama don't know what to do with him anymore, so she sends him to his daddy. And his daddy figures it out. Like, they have a tough way to go, but they figure it out. And I'm like, there are other ways that you could have got to this. Even if it's a true story, like, if it's a true story, I appreciate it. And they allude to the fact that many parts of the story is true and some of it isn't. Or am I getting this confused with another? I think I'm getting this confused with another movie. If this is this particular person's story, then it's their story and you got to go with it. But I don't know why that needed to be a major part of this thing, that she just could not deal with him. Except that somebody just said, oh, there needs to be some dynamic push and pull here. So let's put this in here. I really don't like it. I don't like seeing it in film because there's more to us than that trope. And how many times have we seen that trope? Boys in the Hood isn't the only time we've seen that particular trope. The other thing that there's this thing that a lot of quote unquote urban movies do, or movies that are catering to or telling the black experience in an urban environment,
is that, you know, this child specifically is torn between the streets and this other way of life that they actually enjoy. Which one will they choose? Like, come on. Like, everybody understands that every urban city has the allure of fast money. It plagues young people across the globe. It is not specific to the Black experience. It is not specific to the urban experience. Fast money is attractive to everybody. Everybody. But the way that we often see fast money the stories that we often hear about the you know, people getting caught up in fast money and living that fast life is Black and brown kids, right? And this story is no different. Caleb is presented with the option to stay with that fast money or learn something new and grow up in this community of loving cowboys. And I understand why you put this in here, because there needed to be that push and pull. I get it. I get it. But it still doesn't make it less cringy, no matter how good the actors are. Jarrell Jerome is really great in here. Jarrell Jerome's whole purpose is to be the bad boy. That is his purpose in this film. His character is the bad boy. Swoosh is the bad boy. And so he's being the bad boy in this film. And Caleb isn't a bad boy. He's just needs some discipline. And again, really, you just needed tough love and discipline. There is a reason why people act out in school. And it ain't just, I'm missing my father. Because what we see in this film is that he doesn't have a good relationship with his father. We see that in the trailer, that he doesn't like his father, that he's mad at his father for even being there. And instead of sending this boy to therapy, instead of trying to get the three of them in the room together and try to work something out, this movie thought it was more impressive. And again, this might not be a fair assessment of this film, because maybe this is based on real life. And again, I did not do this in the first part, and I will stop here to do it now, because I think I'm being unfair, and I want to be fair. And why did I Google Method Man? Concrete Cowboy. Let me read this synopsis really quick. Sent to live with his estranged father for the summer, a rebellious teen finds kinship at a tight-knit Philadelphia community of Black cowboys. So that is the synopsis in a nutshell, and he does find kinship. He does not find peace. He finds kinship. He doesn't find peace. And I don't think this movie ever gets him to peace. And I think, to be honest with you, it kind of loses the lead. I think it kind of loses the thread here. Because the film is supposed to be about this boy and what he's learning and learning about himself. But this doesn't feel like a coming of age story to me. It feels like a tragedy wrapped up in history, wrapped up in a story, a vehicle for advocating for this community of Black cowboys. And I hate even saying cowboys. This community of cowboys. Let me stop saying that. This community of cowboys in Philly. Like, I feel like this film didn't know what it really wanted to be. Good as the actors were, high caliber as they are, this film didn't. I feel like this film didn't know what it wanted to be. And there's tragedy in it. Again, this is an urban film, so what would an urban film be without tragedy? I hate that perspective, because there's a lot of ways that we could have gotten to the conclusion of this film without tragedy. And again, maybe that's just me not being here for what is necessary in film, and that other people need to see this. Not everybody else grew up watching Boys in the Hood and then seeing Dangerous Minds in the theaters and then seeing the travesty that was the TV show put on air, basically championing the white savior, right? So, like, not everybody saw that. So maybe to see that white people aren't really a factor in this film, which is should have been something that I said, that this is a predominantly black film. There are very few white people in this thing. And when they're in it, they are ancillary characters. They are not important to drive the plot home. They are just a part of the story, but they're not important to the story or moving it forward. Yeah, so I appreciate that aspect of it, but like, I can appreciate how this is something that someone else needs to see, but maybe it's not for me, and maybe I'm not the audience for this thing, even though I like learning about aspects of culture that mainstream media doesn't talk about. I appreciate this film for that, and I said that already. I just, the way that we get to the endings of this, the multiple endings of this story is wild to me, because it just feels like some of this stuff is unnecessary and uncalled for. And another thing, Method Man is a police officer in this film. I don't know why Meth needed to be a police officer. Except to set up this very specific scene in this film. I don't know why he needed to be a police officer. There's this weird thing where movies these days want to show police officers being good in film. And if I'm honest, there's always been films that are that feel like propaganda a little bit. And I'm not on my soapbox. I'm not going to have that conversation. What I don't understand is why Method Man needed to be a police officer. It didn't do anything for the story. Not really. He just was there, and he was a cowboy too, but he was a police officer. We even hear him talk about why he wanted to be a police officer. And again, I keep finding myself, girl, I don't care. Like, I don't care. Why did you need to be a police officer to advance this story? What was so important about you being a police officer to advance this plot? I didn't get it. I don't think this movie needed it. Yeah. So in a nutshell, this film gives me very much several moments where I just take a pause and I'm like, well, now why was that a part of this film? Now, why did I need to know that? Now, why was he in this film in this way? Nevertheless, I still did very much enjoy this thing, even though it felt like it was like a hodgepodge of different ideas. I liked the ideas. I liked the fact that they were trying to focus on this little black boy who needed some direction. I don't like how they got there. I don't like that I didn't get the conclusion that, the thing about it is I love and loathe the fact that I didn't get conclusion on Caleb. Ooh, I keep yawning. I didn't truly get conclusion on where he was going to end up. And the reality of it is you never truly do in life. Like, it takes years for you to get to understand where that child ended up, where that kid who was having issues ended up. But why therapy wasn't a part of this conversation, I'll never know. This was a perfect opportunity to inject therapy in this. They came so close in many instances to talking about therapy, and they just never quite got it. There are some very poignant moments in this film. I can think of three right offhand where there could have been a conversation about therapy. There could have been a conversation about lack of access. There could have been some important conversations had here. They just missed the opportunity. And now that I'm thinking about it, I am reminded of the fact that this is based on Ghetto Cowboy, which is a true story. Is it? No, this is the true story about Neary's young adult novel, Ghetto Cowboy. Yeah. So obviously there's a lot of fiction, there's a lot of fact in here. There's a lot of fiction and there's a lot of fact. This thing is missing some depth, and maybe I need to read Ghetto Cowboy to get a better understanding of what was meant to be on this thing, because what we know is that movies don't always act as great representations of the books that they're based on. Like, we know that. We have several examples of that in our own, across the globe. We have several examples of movies that weren't good representations of the films. We have, what was that one movie? Shoot, I can't call it, but there was a, I remember something about this author being totally disgusted at what ended up being the film based on his book, so much so that he just divorced himself from the whole production. And if I'm honest, this has happened probably more than I even know about, which I don't know a ton, but you get me. Anyway, but I don't know. Maybe Neary enjoyed this adaptation of his book, of his work. I don't think, well, why am I saying I don't? I haven't even read Concrete Cowboy. There's a lot missing here that I'm hoping that the book isn't this stereotypical. That said, I'm saying this, and I'm harshly critiquing this thing because I have high expectations for my Black art. I do. And when you're telling stories that are rarely told, you gotta, I expect you to like really get in and do this thing and not recreate some aspects of 90s films that's what we were thinking then, but this is not what we think now. And again, kids are sent, I was sent away for the summer to give my parents a break. I was sent to be with the cousins. These things happen all the time. That's not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is this idea that magically Caleb is going to be better because he's with his father. This mother left and moved cross country for a reason. And I'm not a parent right now, so I don't know what that, I certainly am not a parent of a teenager, so I don't know what that's like to try to co-parent. And this wasn't even co-parent. Actually, let me pause right there. I don't know what it's like. Let me finish my thought. I don't know what it's like to co-parent a teenager that is being rebellious. But I definitely don't know what it's like, but that's not what this situation was. This situation was this teenager had lived his whole life with his mother, majority of his life with his mother, barely knew his father, and the mother facing issues and difficulties with him and real serious difficulties with her child decides to send him to his father that he doesn't know for a summer. In the hopes of doing what? Getting respite? Because that's the only thing I can think that she was getting out of this. I don't know. I don't know that I would have sent my son to my ex, like under these circumstances. Well, I don't know what I would have done under these circumstances because I don't wish the situation on any parent. Any caregiver, I don't wish this because that has to be a tough decision. And I believe her when she was crying. There's a moment where she drops her son off and she's crying, and it's very tense. And I my heart goes out because I'm quite sure there've been very tough love situations in the past that have happened just like that. But to assume that taking your son out of Detroit and putting him in Philly itself is going to help shape him up, I don't get it. Like, I didn't understand, and I still don't understand why this was necessary. And to be honest with you, it's not as if he magically turned into a kid that listened to his parents and didn't cause trouble anymore. So like, I don't understand why this was, except that we needed to get to the Black Cowboy piece of this thing. Yeah, I think that's the only reason why we got there, because this is based on, because again, I don't want to spoil too much of this thing, but I'm not convinced that this is based on a true story. This is based on a book, a fiction novel that is rooted in fact. This community does exist in Philly, just like the community exists here in Baltimore. But I think it was just a vehicle to get him to talk about this community of folks. Because at the end of the day, we finished the film with giving facts about these real life cowboys. And I'm like, so this whole film was about the cowboys themselves, not necessarily Caleb and his coming of age? Because clearly there's not much coming of age here. He was just here. He doesn't even come of age. It's just the summer. We don't even see that he's super different, except that he now is into horses. Like, that's it. I don't know. It just, I want to really love this story. I did like it. I did say that I like it and I do like it. But I think I've talked myself into being, I'm supporting this thing, not because I love the story, but because of what it represents. But that's me. You may find great enjoyment out of this thing. You might find great, you might feel represented in this thing. Because again, I don't want to be too harsh, because while I believe that this fiction novel was loosely based on real life scenarios, it's still very much fiction. I know that this is somebody's life. I know that somebody's life was, my mama couldn't handle me. And so she sent me to live with my daddy. But what I wanted to know was more about Caleb. That's what I wanted. I wanted to know more about Caleb. I wanted to know how this young man turns out. I want to know, is he getting the help that he needs to overcome the trauma that he's dealing with, the anger, the frustration that he's dealing with? Clearly, the root of his, part of the root of his anger is his disconnection from his father. I imagine he's now also dealing with separation anxiety from his mother, having dropped him off halfway across the country. And She went back home. So I would love to learn more about how he's dealing with all of this and how he's being helped to deal with all of this. It's implied that the horses and being a part of this culture is helping him. But like, I wanted more of that. And especially, it's 2021, man. Like, we can do more. We have access to more information and more knowledge. We can present these concepts to wider audiences. We can inject these into these stories. Not every hood person, everybody is thinking about therapy these days, even if they're not ready to go to it. Like, we can introduce these topics into these conversations and have meaningful discussion around it. But again, at the same time, I go right back to what I said 10 minutes ago, which is I feel like this film didn't know what it wanted to be. And maybe the book provides more clarity, but this film felt like it wanted to be a coming of age story. It also felt like it wanted to be another cautionary tale about the dangers of urban growth, sprawling development, urban development, and how it's decimating communities, cultural communities, which is true not just in the Black community, but it's true all across the country for every community, cultural center, cultural community. These development corporations are tearing out the heart and souls of our communities. They truly are, and putting up a Starbucks, or these days putting up apartment complexes. They're tearing out the heart and souls of a lot of these communities for retail locations and housing, but not housing for the average person, but housing for people that they will charge through the nose to live there. That could have been a story. And then the other thing is, that could have been. So it could have been a coming of age where we're talking about therapy and healing from trauma and building on relationships and having, you know, establishing good relationships with your parents and what that might look like. And then the other one is the cautionary tale about corporate greed and development, out of control urban development. But we got like pieces, bits and pieces of all of that smushed up together in this film that, again, I do support for what it's representing, but I'm not all the way in love with. That said, that there are very tender moments in this film that I think you should watch. There's some, like I said, there's a whole story in the middle of this thing that I think everybody should hear about the Cowboys of Philly, because it's really telling the whole story about cowboys across the United States, communities of Black cowboys across the United States, and what has happened. Again, I've already shared that it's part of the story of Kansas City. I'm sure the Kansas City Cowboys. I'm sure of it. So, nevertheless, I'm gonna stop picking on this thing. I enjoy the actors for who they are. Lorraine Toussaint, her character, in my opinion, is the only one without blemish. She's not in it nearly enough for me. But she's in it. When she's in it, she steals. And that's what she's supposed to do. You're supposed to steal the show. And for me, she steals the show. So if you watch this thing for nobody else other than Lorraine Toussaint, that will be time well spent. So anyway, I'm done talking about this thing. Watch this thing. Learn more about A-Rappers in Baltimore. Learn more about the cowboys in your community, especially if you're from the United States. If you're not from the United States, it's just something interesting to look into. Because it's an aspect of that diaspora life that people really don't know about. And so again, above anything else, I enjoy that being exposed here in this film. So anyway, if you have thoughts, you're welcome to click the show notes and leave me a message using anchor.fm, the voice apps. I'll hear it and I'll get to it and I will respond to you. Also, if you want to like and subscribe to this thing, you're welcome to do that on any of the platforms that you listen to or you're hearing this thing from. Obviously, the Purple app is a really big one. It drives a lot of the algorithms for the others, I would think. But then also, I might be totally wrong, but rating and subscribing this on any of the platforms that you listen to this thing would be a good idea for me. Spotify, obviously, is a big one. All of the places, actually, because Pocket Cast, CastBox, all of the places where you listen to this thing, I just appreciate you for listening. Sharing this with people who you think would enjoy it. And then rating this show, if you would, please, rating it positively. And if you want to leave a comment, a positive comment, I'll read it on this thing because you're really helping me to expand the reach of this show, which is the thing that's helping me to continue to do this little hobby that I've been doing for years now, that I hope to continue to do for years to come. So thank you so much for sharing and helping me to expand the reach of this show. And thank you for spending time with me today. You literally could be listening to any other podcast out there on this, on the World Wide Web, but you're listening to me, and I appreciate you for that. If you were completing a task and I was playing in the background, thank you for that. Hope you were able to finish that thing and you were able to move on satisfactorily to the next thing. If you're just listening to this thing to wind down, I appreciate you so much for that. I hope you're relaxed and ready to do this next thing that you're doing, even if that's sleeping. If you're listening to this at the top of your day, hey, good morning. Have a great day. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day. Until next time.